You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And this is a big week with a lot of fun books coming out. So let's kick it off because it's summer, baby. Sun's out.
Is it?
Sun's out. S is out, as I always say, with the Summer of Superman special number one from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, Mark Waid, and Joshua Williamson, art by Jorge Jimenez. You can probably figure this out from the title, but there is a Superman movie coming out later this summer. So DC is all in on the Man of Steel and his family.
I see.
And this is kicking it off, giving us, and I thought this was an interesting structure, not to get right into the review portion, but I thought it was interesting because it is one overarching story, but at the same time, you've got three guys working on three different Superman titles, all giving us not exactly a preview of their title necessarily, but a little bit of the feel. And so what you get here is Mark Waid is doing a Superboy story like he will be doing in Action Comics. Dan Slott is full-time jumping over to DC. He's doing a new series called Superman Unlimited. And Joshua Williamson, as we talked about on the show, is the ongoing writer on Superman. So that's what you kind of got going on here. Justin, feels like you would like to jump in and say something.
Justin, well, do you think this is going to be the summer of Superman, like a brat summer, if you will?
Yes, I think we're all going to have, I mean, you guys both went so crazy for brat summer that I think this is going to be sort of brat take to super brat.
So sick. I ate so many brats that summer. And by the end,
I think you mean,
like,
those are brats.
Brats.
Those are brats, Alex.
Brats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What a misjudgment of that, what that was.
My
what
fault,
that
was
cultural
very tasty.
Moment was.
It was very tasty. Yeah.
You must have been very confused when Kamala was brought.
Yeah. I kept picturing her. I was so hungry. I kept picturing her as a big sausage up there on the stage at the DNC. Yeah. Let's not talk about that. That makes me sad. Let's talk about Superman instead. What were you going to say, Justin?
Yeah, Justin.
So obviously, there's big Dan Slott energy moving into the DC universe, and it's interesting seeing him and Mark Waid. Like, they feel like they are really a nice complement to each other on these two titles, and their stories I think dovetail really nicely in here. All three really worked well. I like where this is going. To get into the back end of it. Are we seeing the crossover to the Absolute Universe happening here in real time, basically?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know.
Yes.
Is that...
Yeah.
I'm surprised we're getting that at this moment.
Well, we're heading into something happening, I think, in October, which is going to be about a year of DC All In and Absolute Universe. So I actually feel like that's an appropriate time to start broaching the subject, which is what I think they're going to do. Like, they're not going to have the full-on Crisis on Infinite Earth style thing, but they're definitely inching in that direction. And I was very surprised about that. You know, I think to give you guys listening the overarching story here, Lana Lang and John Henry Irons are getting married in Smallville. But at the same time, there's this time incursion that's happening from a frenemy of the Legion of Superheroes, pops up in Superboy times, then towards the beginning of the wedding, and then they try to solve the problem. But ultimately, like Justin's saying, it ties back to the events of the DC All-In special, which we haven't really seen in this way since October. So it was very cool.
Yeah. I agree. This was a fun ish. A lot of stuff to enjoy here. The wedding stuff was cool. Fun kind of return of a bad guy there. So, yeah, I thought this was a solid special.
Well, hold on. I do want to talk about this more specifically, though, because I do think, as a preview of what's to come, the big question mark is Dan Slott on Superman. We've generally really liked his work for Marvel. How do you feel he fit in DC?
I mean, it's almost a more natural fit. I mean, he's known as, like, Spider-Man. Like, he wrote Spider-Man for so long. That's, so like, long. Very close to his heart. But I actually think Superman's a more natural fit to his sensibility. Oh. And I think this is going to be this is a sort of long tail call that I'm making. But I feel like this will be the run that he is known for, is working on Superman. Wow. It feels like, and that's, you know, he had a long run on Spider-Man. So, but he brought us like Superior Spider-Man. He did a lot of things with the character, but his style just feels like, and his tone feels like a more natural fit to the Superman character in general.
That's interesting that you say that, because I find him more of a humor writer. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Spider-Man fits that sensibility a little bit more. And I'm wondering, you know, if his writing, if he had to kind of like fight that at all. But so far, so good. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what big swings he takes or when he really kind of puts his stamp on. But yeah, so far, I mean, the most compliment I could give it was I wasn't like, oh, this is clearly Slott or whatever. I felt like, really felt like a Superman comic. So,
well, in response to that, I would say I think over the course of his Spider-Man run, he moved away from the humor a lot. I mean, sure, there were still quips and stuff, but it became so much more about the heart of the character and less about him being funny. So I think that's where he has been going for a long time. So the journey makes sense to go here. I really liked the Mark Waid into Dan Slott story with Lana Lang. I loved the idea that he saw his future and that changed the way his like crush went in the past. Like, what a cool little moment to highlight in the Superman story.
It's an interesting idea, right? Because it's like, there's, you know, it's this thing of like, do you want to know your future? If you could know one thing, what would you change? But it's interesting that, like, if he liked her, just because his future was somebody else doesn't mean that this time can't be spent with Lana a little bit. You know, enjoy that before,
yeah,
you know,
but
he gets married.
So, again, for anybody who hasn't read the book, Superboy gets sucked through time. He's about to tell Lana that he likes her.
Yeah.
And then he gets sucked through time and sees in his future he's married and with Lois. And he's like, oh, God, no, that could never happen. Get me out of here. There's also spell's the wrong word, but there's something on him that I think Brainiac from the Legion put on him so that he wouldn't remember the future, so he wouldn't cause any paradoxes. So he doesn't remember this happening. But his upsetness about it felt very natural to me. Like, when you're that age, you're like, no, this is the love of my life. Nothing else can change that. And anything else you would hear would be devastating. Absolutely.
Well,
devastating.
And let me say, it's a testament to how it works in the comic that I was like, oh, this makes really, this makes good sense here. I like the way the story unfolded. Then I was like, but in real life, if someone was like, hey, you're going to marry this person someday, I'm like, what, am I going to sit here and wait?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, have some fun now with Lana. She likes you too.
Yeah, you want to see a Superman go on like an erotic journey throughout
his
20s.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just
saying. You want a real, like, sex quest.
I was
a
trying to back
Superman.
You up, Justin, and you quickly turned on me. Dude.
You fell into my backing me up trap. Gotcha.
It's now you're the summer of sexer, man, if you know what I mean. And I think you do.
Do you think Superman's ever like, Lois Lane, Lana Lang? This is too convenient. This is easy.
Do you think
this
he's ever like, Fish in a Barrel? Lana Lang, Lois Lane, Lex Luthor?
Oh.
Yeah, that's
the, it happened. They can finally settle it for good. It's interesting, and we can move on after this, but it's interesting that you're not mentioning the Joshua Williamson story, which I thought was the best one in here, and really doubled down for me on, I know you said Dan Slott has the potential to be an all-timer, and I agree, but like my big takeaway here is Joshua Williamson is writing one of the all-time great Superman runs right now. Like, the amount of confidence that was in those pages, just the pace, the care that was given to each of the particular moments, hit perfectly.
Yeah, no, I'm not down crediting him at all. Like, I love his writing, and in fact, I think he's more versatile than Mark and Dan. Like, he can tell sort of any story. I feel like he can feel his, like, he has the harder job in this book where he has to finish the wedding story and then tell all these other pieces and make it cohere. And I think he really does that. And does it well. So, like, it truly is the summer of Superman.
Yes. Wait, sorry. I just want to say one last thing and then we can move on, just because I want to give a shout out to...
You keep saying we're going to move on.
No, this is literally the last thing. No,
because you said that the last time, though.
That's true. I mean? I wanted to say something about Joshua Williamson, but now I want to say something about Jorge Jimenez, because...
So don't put a caveat as my note, then.
Okay. And then I have one more note about the sexual journey of Superman.
Yes, and Pete, famously, you don't like to talk about the art, so should I just not give credit to the artist?
Yeah, that's a great idea, yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather you be more accurate.
Okay, great. Why don't we move on then to the next?
No, talk about the art. Come on,
talk about the art. I was really floored by the fact that Jorge Jimenez drew three stories for three different guys and had three different art styles in here.
Yes,
and three really different amazing types of panel layouts. That's crazy.
It's really impressive.
Yeah,
that's some real flexing right there. That's some impressive art.
Yeah. So, great special, very fun. We are all going to get laid this summer. Wolverine number 8 from Marvel.
All right, great news.
Written by, great news. Hey, I've got some good news for you.
Hey, bro, it's not news, you know. It's already been happening.
Written by Sandra Ahmed and Daniel Warren Johnson. Art by Martine Coccolo and Daniel Warren Johnson. The first couple of stories are wrapping up Wolverine's fight against the Adamantine and also the Wendigo arc as he goes up against Arcade.
So glad.
The end of that, Marvel has promised the biggest twist in Wolverine's 400-issue history. And then the backup story is Daniel Warren Johnson writing and drawing the story of a samurai-era Wolverine.
Hell yeah.
Pete, you're our sharps expert. Over to you.
400 issues, baby. We did it. We did it. Yes! What a journey. What a trip it's been. Oh, man.
Could you real quick, I don't want to interrupt, but could you real quick just sort of recap the last 400 issues of Wolverine?
I mean, first he had claws, and then he lost them, and they were just bones. And then he got his claws back, and then he had a kid. Then he learned out about his name and where he came from. And then at the end of this, turns out mom's here. What? Oh, shit. Mom's dropping notes off. What a time.
I mean, that was actually pretty good.
Thank you. But I do think that I love the last couple of pages where you get to see all the covers. It's like going back in time. I remember exactly like where I was when these comics dropped, what was going on. So, oh man, just seeing those old Civil War covers was a nice kind of journey back. What a time. What a time to be alive. But yeah,
you're talking about the covers in the back first?
Of course he was. I got to that and I was like, Pete's going to love this and talk about this first.
See? I guess AI can be real because you can just plug me in and I'm going to do what you think.
But here's the thing, Pete. What if you had some sort of heart attack and you never got to talk about Daniel Warren Johnson's story and instead you were like, the covers in the back that they do every 50 issues of Wolverine.
Justin,
article.
It's okay. We've got ChatGPT to cover it.
Man, the real kick in the pants.
Man. But yeah, I mean, this was, I thought, a great celebration and also a great issue. A lot of crazy stuff that happens in here. I don't know if I'm ready for the mom stuff. That shit was like a little, I don't know. I thought it was kind of crazy. I was like, what are we doing right now? But Could be interesting. Could be interesting. I thought it was a crazy turn. I'm so glad that with the Wendigo thing paid off, because I was really worried about that. So I felt like that had a great ending. So I felt like that journey was really nice.
I mean, I do think the second story that got into that stuff was good, was better. The adamantine stuff, this never really hit for me. Like, yeah. Not... It felt like, and I'm surprised, it felt like it was something that was going to go on for a long time, and it's only been 400 issues of doing it, you know, so I feel like we could have got a couple more out of it. But more seriously, it just felt like, I don't know quite what this is about, and then it was resolved sort of quickly, mm-hmm. and it felt like Wolverine was just along for the ride for a lot of it. So the other stories I enjoyed more, the Daniel Warren Johnson stuff was very cool. It was nice to see him doing that and drawing that.
Yeah, it was. It was artistically amazing, but also just like, I love that kind of history of Wolverine so much. I wish we visited that a little bit more. But man, it was cool to see for sure.
I did like the arcade story, but two things that I want to mention about
crazy him. Ending on that.
Crazy ending, Arcade going so much harder than he usually goes in this story. Like, usually he's like, I got some goofy robots and they look like your friends. This one, he's like, I'm going to go through entire tortured history while your Wendigo friend is maybe going to bite some people's heads off. And then I'm going to trap you in some acid and it's going to burn you down to your bones. Just very, like...
He's frustrated. Imagine being named Arcade. That's like being named Beeper or Traveler. It doesn't exist anymore.
It's not clear who hired him, because his whole thing is like, well, I didn't do anything. I was just hired by this guy to kill you. But this time he's like, I'm going to create a fucked up death trap for you, Wolverine. So, I don't know. I mean, that took me out a little bit, but otherwise I did like it. I liked
how hard. And Justin, his name was great in the 80s and 90s when they were around. You know what I mean?
But it'd be like if he was named Sega Genesis. It'd be like, God, your time is past, dude.
Yeah, what should he be called? Steam Deck or something? What do you guys think?
Yes, I wish we should rename him Massive Multiplayer RPG.
Oh, wow.
Perfect. Yes, and great art on the Daniel Warren Johnson story. Here's to 400 more.
Yeah!
Teenage Mutant, and then that's it, and then it's canceled. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 8 from IDW, written by Jason Aaron, art by Juan Ferreira. The Turtle Brothers are fighting.
Turtle Brothers,
and it really goes down in this issue, a thing that's been going on with the dead Splinter Rat that we kind of intuited may in fact be true. We get two great guest stars here that go really hard. Pete, you doing okay?
No, I'm not. And it's hard because it's like, you know, in Aaron we trust. He's an unbelievable writer. But we're 8 issues in, and this is beating the fuck out of my childhood. You know, this is depressing shit right now. And it's hard to keep going in this direction. I'm trying to trust the process and be on board. I think it's a very interesting story, a very cool, unique look at something that was a huge part of my life. But man, this has been tough right now. I still am hanging with it though, because I want it to end well. But man, this is not looking good.
You just want them spinning pizzas and doing ollies on their skateboards.
Well, so this is why I hear what you're saying.
Just want to get along and be brothers again.
I hear what you're saying. Oh, okay. So that might be the thing. This is jumping ahead to my conclusion here. But I was going to say, like, if your child is the Eastman and Laird TMNT, the original comic books, this is what happened to them and worse. Like, the thing that stuck to me and really sold me on the Turtles is when they get absolutely ripped apart by Shredder and have to run out of the city to a farm and hide out because they've been beaten so badly in the original. I think it was like this first 6 issues or something like that.
That's correct. Yes.
So that's what they're calling on here. And I love seeing them so down because we know they're going to win. We know they're going to get back
on
top.
It's not looking good, bro. No.
This is the turn of this issue. He's done. Yeah, but I think it's great. Like, take them out and then show us how they become heroes and a team again. That's
what I'm hoping is going to happen, dude. But we're still 8 in, and we have
18.
Well, I think Hey, wow. I think not only do they have to come together as brothers, but they need to get Donnie on some, like, really intense, like,
yeah,
bulking.
Like, nutrition diet. He's deprived of some real
shakes.
Yeah. He's not eating, man. He's not sleeping well. This is
he's not doing machines, that's for sure. that's what I miss about him the most.
You're an asshole, man. That's
I will say,
up.
I do like this. And it's funny, Pete, you're like, oh, they're not brothers. I'm like, half of what they talk about in this is like, we got to be brothers again. So, like, that's on their minds. They're not.
Yeah,
they're just doing a shitty job, though.
It's like
they've identified the problem, and they need to come together. They're working on it. And, like, it's funny to me, like, this is a Leo perspective issue. Mm-hmm. He's doing sort of a bad job at leading because he's just being mad all the time.
Yep.
And I think he's starting to realize that, and he's hearing Dead Splinter, so great news. What's funny to me in this is Raph and Michelangelo are just being so shitty to each other the whole time. They're off panel a lot, just like slapping each other in their little turtle faces, I guess.
Yeah. Brother stuff, and then, you know what I mean? Doing brother stuff.
I mean, the Donatello stuff, like, is like major trauma style storytelling. Like, he's been through something, he's trying to replicate the trauma over the course of the issue. And I will say, I don't know how they're going to get him back on track.
Yeah. Because
it's pretty clear that they haven't been able to reach him even a little bit. So I agree, there's trouble in Turtletown. But we've got to see Rocksteady and Bebop, and Crane's probably next.
Great. Come on, dude. That was awesome seeing them.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good
amazing
comic
art.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion, or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Moving on to Batman Superman World's Finest, number 38 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Clayton Henry. This is the kickoff of the first crossover of the DC All-In era, We Are Yesterday. And it kicks off in interesting fashion. I thought we were going to get more of a pickup of the cliffhanger from Justice League Unlimited, where it was revealed that it seems like there was a time-traveling Legion of Doom thing is going on here. But instead, this is a story about Gorilla Grodd, once again trying to take over Gorilla City. I will admit I had a little cognitive dissonance with the new history of the DCU, where they were like, Gorilla City, what's that? And I was like, you guys have been there so many... Oh, okay, you haven't done it yet in this...
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, it was... I agree with you. That was strange. Like, when Flash... They're asking Flash, he's like, sorry, I've been here before, but I didn't tell you about it because it's a secret from you guys. And I was like, what? Everyone knows about Gorilla Grodd, and they don't, I guess. But I will say, like, I liked this story structure, and I like the idea that we're going to see all of these villains plucked out of different situations into this time-traveling Legion of Doom as the villains for this upcoming Justice League is really cool.
I thought this was a really great issue. I loved all of the action, loved the twists and turns. I just felt like this was just such a fun read and really well done. I thought this was a blast.
Yeah, Mark Waid is just a really solid writer with a complete command of the DC universe. He can bring in a bunch of different Justice League characters at will and make them all work together. I don't know. It's like having a really good games master or something like that, where he's like, ooh, and here comes the Flash in this Batman.
Like a really good arcade.
Yeah, like a really good Steam Deck, if you will.
Well, a Steam Deck. What I like about this especially is that Mark Waid has such a command of the history behind these characters. So this feels like a classic story written in the modern times. Like all of this stuff felt like they took an old comic, rewrote it so it was better, and then brought in new art. And that's nice.
Yep, good stuff. Superior Avengers, number one from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Luca Maresca with Kyle Hotz. This is a tie-in to One World Under Doom. And the idea here, to get into spoilers, because the issue is very much built around who is this team, who are they, how do they get here, is Dr. Doom's son has built a time machine to pluck people out of timelines where Doom was successful, to put together their own Avengers team to show, hey, isn't it great that Doom took over the world? There's obviously a little more going on here, but we're getting new riffs on villains like Dr. Octopus, Onslaught, Ghost, Killmonger, a couple of other folks. And like I said, they've got a secret of their own hiding in the background. The whole thing, even though it's called Superior Avengers, feels very beholden. Yes, exactly. Very beholden to classic Thunderbolts, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But what did you guys think about this issue? Pete?
I thought this was a ton of fun. And yeah, sounds like something Doom's son would do. So yeah, I thought this was really great. And maybe a couple of characters on here would be on my Thunderbolts team. You know what I mean? But, oh man, this is...
Your personal? Hold on, just real quick. Your personal Thunderbolts? Like, you're sending them out into the world?
No, I'm just saying if we did a draft...
You're the Amanda Waller-style person.
Interesting. If we did some sort of Thunderbolts draft, though, this is not a Thunderbolts team, so you would not be allowed to use any of these.
Well, some of them, if they were on the Thunderbolts, would be available to be drafted, so...
Yes, if they were on the Thunderbolts, which they are not, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying if they were.
If they were. Well, right. For sure. If Pizza was on the Thunderbolts, I could draft Pizza to my Thunderbolts team.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Pizza would be a good member of a Thunderbolts team.
I'm just saying I could if it would, but it isn't.
I mean, if we were drafting a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles team, I think Pizza would be number one or two for me.
Pizza number one, Dead Rat number two.
Oh, yeah. Man, too soon, bro. Too soon.
But the Pizza and the Dead Rat.
Dead Rat. I think that this is, this is a ton of fun, very well executed. Cool to kind of see this evil team work together in this way. I thought this did a great job. Not cool how Doom does Hulk, but other than that, this is a blast.
Oh, yeah, Amadeus Cho gets murked and absolutely destroyed.
Not cool, dude. Not cool.
I liked that. I mean, I gotta say, I really liked this, just conceptually. Like, to break it down, to break down the issue a little bit, we have Doom's son is sort of like a fail son, putting to this team together, doing a rush job. They come back, they do the missions that Doom wants, but they're secretly fighting against Doom, right? They are needed to, because they're all from the future where Doom has ruined everything. So they're here to actually change their past. And that's a great just, like, inside out on the whole, like, Dark Avengers, Thunderbolts, any of that stuff.
Now,
like,
this...
they do the trick twice here, and that's really... I didn't see it coming. I thought it was really smartly done.
Now, you guys, as parents, got to worry about this, you know, about your kids working secretly against you all the time. You know what I mean? That's got to be a real concern.
Doom's son is not working against him, just the rest of the team is.
Oh, okay.
He made a mistake.
My son would never work against me.
Yes. I don't have a boy child. So, like, there's never been a story where a son has overthrown his father, famously.
Yeah, okay. So I think, Alex, you're fine. Purposely.
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay.
But right. I will say, when your son does kill you, he will have a home here on Comic Book Club.
Yeah. I will also say, yesterday we watched The Force Awakens, and right after I was like, hey, just do me a favor. Do not kill me, do not stab me through with a lightsaber. And he's like, I probably wouldn't do that.
So he was like, oh, okay. He crossed things off on his list as you were saying them?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He really identifying with Adam Driver in the movie? He's like, oh, I like him. I like his moves.
Adam Driver's guy is great, right, Dad?
Yeah, for sure.
And you, of course, are number one Han Solo in our hearts as well.
Absolutely. And my son, who is 10 years old, is a huge fan of A Marriage Story. So this was a big surprise for him.
Wow.
Moonshine, I like the way he's a husband.
Moonshine. I like it when he punches that wall. Moonshine Bigfoot, number one, from Image Comics, written by Mike Marlowe and Zach Howard, art by Steve Ellis. This is basically What If Dukes of Hazzard, but with cryptids.
This is the most Pete coded book we've covered in a long time.
It's a great
time.
I think that's
Pete on the cover of the book.
It's a great title. I mean, come on, man. This is just fun. Yeah, it's
Pete has those shorts and his legs are that hairy.
That's true. I do have hairy legs. I just think that this is like Dukes of Hazzard, but Bigfoot's Bo and Duke. You know what I mean? So it's a niche thing, but it definitely fills the spot for sure.
Wow, are you launching into a criticism because it's not too
Dukes? What is this niche thing? What niche?
If you liked the Dukes of Hazzards and maybe think and cryptids are cool, you're going to love this. This is a perfect...
Oh, okay, that niche. Not like if you watch Dukes of Hazzard and really wish they were one guy.
One dude. Yeah, I want Duke of Hazzard. I'm sick of these Duke boys. I want Duke boy.
This was crazy. This felt like, Dukes of Hazzard mixed with Hot Wheels, mixed with cryptids. Every page was packed. It felt very like reading a million Mad Magazine fold-ins in a row. So shout out to Steve Ellis on all the art for that. It's exactly what is advertised on the tin, and I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. We've read a lot of racing comics over the years, and it fits right into that genre as well. If you like any of those, there's a Speed Racer comic coming soon. I think this has that bones. The surprise to me was that there's a Cobra style villain at the end of this comic. And I was like, that's a genre I didn't expect in here. But we'll see how this is the kind of book that I feel like can go in any direction, and it will just fill the tank that it ends up being in. So that's exciting. There. Yeah. And I also thought there was a fun little backup following one of the Chupacabra cryptid.
That was
fun. Cool. Yeah.
That was a good time. Good time at the old comic book shop. Next up, Absolute Flash, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Nick Robles. Wally West is still on the run from the Rogues and starts experimenting with his powers in this issue. Justin, I believe you may have had a reappraisal of this title.
Yes. Yeah, Justin.
Sort of a come to Jesus moment for Flash. Whoa. For our come to Wally moment, because this issue is great. The pace of this comic and the way that it plays with time really, really elevated it in this second issue. I thought everything came into a much sharper focus here, and while it doesn't have the same tone as the other Absolute comics, I think it has its own stressed tone. It's more antic as opposed to just like a darker tinge like the other books have, and that really tracks with Flash, and it's actually a smart choice, I think. And I like, there's a great page deep in the issue where we see sort of two alternate futures for the way this Wally West character is going to go. And I thought that was really awesome. I loved the sort of man or monster take here, and it feels like that's what we're getting, because he truly is like someone whose powers are absolutely out of control, and he has no idea what to do with them.
I agree with you right up until the end. I feel like the reveal at the end was a little underwhelming. You know what I mean? Because they like built it up. And then they're like, and...
The very last page you're talking about.
Yeah, and that, they were like, and Space Monkey. And you're like, what? So
But Pete's talking about here is the Rogues are trying to take care of Wally West. They can't get him. And they're like, all right, you know what we're going to do? We got to bring out Grodd. And you're like, oh, shit, here comes Gorilla Grodd. And instead, it's a sort of, who was it, Meep-style Space Monkey comes out of there going, ah! So it's a comedy beat. That's what's going on, Pete.
No.
Really? Interesting. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a nice twist.
Okay, I can see why you would be like, oh, what a fun twist. But I was
it had sort of Beast Boy energy.
It was like all this big reveal, and they kind of built it up, and I was like, why are we scared of a space monkey?
Well, we don't know yet. We'll find out next
issue. Well, we don't know what that
space
monkey's going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that I think the thing...
Also, amazing art, and that's a fun cover there. Sorry.
Yes, amazing art. The thing that is making this feel a little different from the other ones is that it's very much paced for the trade so far, it feels like, versus Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, the first three out of the gate, all felt like they were aiming for the single issue, even though they did have, obviously, these overarching arcs that are going on here. This is one that, like, I think because of the pace, because you have a character that just keeps running over the first five or six issues or whatever it is, that's going to be something that's going to really, really nicely as a trade book, and feels maybe a little lighter month to month to me. But I like it.
Interesting. So. I mean, that's fair. I also want to shout out the colors are so well done in this. Like really bright reds and oranges. Mm-hmm. So that's Adriano Lucas on the colors. Really cool.
Yeah.
Great Godzilla vs. Hulk, number one for Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Giuseppe Camuncoli. This is the second of a series of one-shots where Godzilla is taking on the Marvel Universe. Here, we're getting, I think, what seems to be an alternate history, because there's certainly a lot of folks dead, or it might be a niche, to use Pete's word, in Marvel history, where a lot of different stuff is going on. Either way, first one was set in the 60s. This, I believe, is set in the 70s. Pete, you seem stoked. Take it away.
Oh, my God. What a blast of an issue this is. I love this cover. I want that to be a T-shirt. This is just... I love it. And then kind of I was worried because I was like, oh my God, I want to root for Godzilla. I always root for Godzilla, but versus the Hulk, always. Hulk's my guy. Who do
even
I
even when pick? Godzilla was canceled for that those tweets, like, you still were rooting for Godzilla.
Wow, yeah. Dude, wow.
That was a shocking choice for you, Pete, but really nice you stood by.
Godzilla still hasn't really apologized either.
Oh, no. Guys,
like, I mean, there was that notes app thing, but like, I don't consider
it didn't
that
really
apology.
Yeah, it was halfway, it counts, half apology.
It counts. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, I just there's this line that I just love so much, where Hulk says, we monsters stick together. Oh, what a powerful, lovely, unbelievable line. Suck it, Ross. Fuck you. Yeah, this was great. I just
Ross
had
from Whoa. Friends. Ross from Friends. Suck it.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Also, you know, the big bad Ross from Marvel Comics, you know.
Yeah. Ross from Friends.
That's Sergeant. That's who I want. That's who I want in the next iteration, you know, the of Thunderbolt Hulk. Ross is Ross is David Schwimmer playing Ross from Friends.
Yeah, it'd be less scary.
We're on a break.
That's what he hulks out.
Yeah.
I will break you like the time I was on a break.
But it's great how many comics Godzilla has been in lately, and I'm having a blast.
Yeah. Godzilla is, I'm just thinking about this for the first time, is a big busy slut lately and like really out there doing a lot of work. And so shouts to that. Get busy, be busy, stay busy. The ultimate fight I want to see is Godzilla versus Godzuki, father against son, like Alex and his son. We'll see who wins.
One day,
who dies.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah. But this was fun. I mean, there's a turn here at one point that I thought was really cool and well done. And then there's a little tip at the end that there may be more in this little pocket universe. So good on you.
I mean, there's four more issues in these one-shots, or maybe three more issues, I'm forgetting which. And then they just announced that Jerry Duggan is going to do a five-issue miniseries starting in July called Godzilla Destroys the Marvel Universe.
The Duggs.
The Duggs.
As we always say.
There you go. Buried Long, Long Ago, number one from Mad Cave Studios, written by Anthony Cleveland, art by Alex Cormack. This is following three kids who go to visit their mom, who has just got married, and there are some dark, dark things waiting for them there.
Oh, Jesus.
I loved how this spun out, because I really could not predict where the story was going to go minute to minute, and it just got darker and more upsetting as it went.
Sure did.
We're going to have Anthony Cleveland on our live show next week, so
seems dangerous.
I didn't really know anything about this going in, but now I'm very excited to talk to him about it.
I'm
what
scared.
Do you guys think about this one?
I really enjoyed this as well, because for a book called Buried Long, Long Ago, like, I was like, oh, there's a lot of fucked up stuff happening in the present.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right now, yeah.
So, like, the buried stuff,
buried,
I'm like,
anything. Yeah.
It feels like that was just like a flip that I didn't see coming. And I really liked that, because I'm like, oh, something's is rising from the mud. I'm like, oh no, they're dealing with like a straight up murder right now. So that I really liked that. That kept me unsettled. And in addition to the horror that Pete's wetting his pants about, like, I thought this was really, this is a double pee pants, my highest honor.
Yeah, this is definitely double pee pants. I mean, this cover alone is, you got to wear Depends, because this is scary, scary stuff. And a lot of noping going on for me when I was reading this. I was like, nope, nope, oh no. And then ruining getting midnight snacks.
The coveted seven nopes from Pete.
No one's going to get midnight snacks again after this. I mean, it's just.
That's good for your health, I will say.
Yeah. No,
wait, hold on a second. I have to say. How often are you getting up and you're getting out of bed and going and eating a meal?
Yeah, Pete? That's the whole point of a midnight snack.
Do you really eating, do that? Do you go to sleep, wake up, and then eat?
Yeah, prepare a meal. Yeah, it's midnight.
Prepare? Tell me what midnight snack you're having, like a four-course tasting?
Like a roast?
Yeah.
You're making ribs from scratch? You're pulling them out of the package, smoking them for 4 hours?
And that's right. Yeah. Yeah, man.
No longer a midnight snack, Pete. That's breakfast.
Well, by the time you eat, it's like 3 or 4, but man, it's
that's called a midlife crisis.
It's starting at midnight. You got to do your prep work.
I've been having a lot of midlife snacks lately.
Good for you, man. Have a bunch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's really
just
good.
Don't die at your fridge. You know what I mean? Like, that's the worst way to go. You know, just get the snack.
And if you are going to die, definitely talk about the cover collage first before you get into the stuff that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And be sure to pick up my new book, Don't Die at Your Fridge, Die at Your Fridge.
Wow. Oh, that's your diet?
Book? Yeah. It's
die just, at your fridge?
Yeah, it's just like don't die at snacks. Your fridge. It's die one at page
your
long.
You got to date your fridge. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, date your fridge.
What
yeah.
are we talking about here? Buried Long Marriage. Long Ago is very good. Check it out. It's spooky scary. DC X Sonic the Hedgehog, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Ian Flynn. Art by Adam Bryce Thomas. Darkseid is coming for the Chaos Emeralds. It's up to the Justice League and Team Sonic to take him down, which they're not doing a very good job of this issue, man. And things get very bad. I continue to think this crossover is a lot of fun. What about you guys?
I don't know if they should have trusted these hedgehogs. And honestly, if someone was like, we have to team up with these hedgehogs to save the universe, I wouldn't trust them either.
What? And have you not seen any of the Sonic movies? Come on, bro.
Yeah. I really like the sequence where all of the Justice League were riding on their different vehicles and stuff. That was fun.
That was
I mean that sincerely, by the way. Like, I like that this crossover is more firmly set in the Sonic world. It's much more all ages friendly. And I like that. I like that tone. It's fun to see the Justice League in that.
I agree.
You go.
Okay, I agree. I also think it's surprising that, like, how hard it's going based the fact that it's in the Sonic universe. You would think it would be a little lighter, but I appreciate what they're bringing to this. Yeah, I was surprised at how much I liked this and how much fun it was. Great art. This is action-packed. I was surprised how on the edge of my seat I was for this.
Yeah, how many nopes?
No nopes, man. This was all yeses. This is all yeses.
No nopes. I will say, I think this, the way they resolved this issue and sort of pushed through the boss battle that I was expecting to be a couple more issues down the line to get to a new idea, I thought that was really cool. So good on you, hedgehogs.
Here's another crossover in the making, Web of Venomverse, Fresh Brains, number 1 from Marvel, written by Matt Groom, David Dasmalchian, Erica Schultz, and Chris Eliopoulos. Art by Luciano Vecchio, Juan Jose Rip, Dylan Burnett, Chris Allen, and Chris Eliopoulos. Similar to the Spider-Verse issue that came out a little while ago, they are looking for a champion to lead the Venomverse team, and so we get a bunch of potential new Venoms that show up here with different iterations. Pete, you're our Venom guy. What'd you think?
This is a blast. This is a ton of fun. I love the Venom Mouse first kind of story. It was so great. Also, the Mandy's Phlegm story in the back was amazing. Fun art, great stories here. This is a tight package, man. This is fun. It's a little goopy at times. But man, this is a blast.
I will say I do like the format of these two issues that we've been talking about, the Spider-Verse and now this Venomverse one, where it really is this like, who should I pick? It's just very funny to me that the first story was about a literal mouse that gets its own symbiote. And then after that, the person deciding, like, should I pick the tiny mouse Venom to lead the team of Venoms? Well, it makes like a sort of a heartfelt, like, actually, no, that mouse needs to lead its own revolution. I was like, you're not going to pick a mouse to lead your Venom team.
Hey, dude, come on, dude. You know what I mean? Like, there's been a lot of heroic mouses, you know? Mighty Mouse was a fucking hero, dude. You wouldn't pick Mighty Mouse first in your fucking team? Come on, dude. And that mouse did a great job of saving that whole lab of animals, bro. He went back for the other animals. Come on.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think they decided Mouse Venom first and then realized they could do Venom Mouse? Or was it Venom Mouse just, like, from the start?
It's probably been a mouse from the start. You know what I mean?
I had $1,000 on Pete saying Mighty Mouse was a fucking hero on this podcast. So I just hit just a pretty sick parlay.
You're gonna clock out. You're gonna cash out now.
I'm out of here. There's no way he's gonna say the other thing I said. He's say. It's the thing that got Godzilla in so much trouble on Twitter. Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
In the second story, I really like the Kitty Power Venom.
Of course,
design.
You did Power yeah, Back.
No, yeah, come no, on. That like. I actually thought this is one of the more
Katie
interesting.
Pry, come on, this is right up your alley.
I thought this is one of the more interesting Venom variant designs we've seen, where her entire face is
you.
Tongues. It was really unsettling and gross.
It was.
When the teeth, the sort of like mouth that was on top, and the teeth were sort of everywhere. I agree with you. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought that would have been the better choice. Of the Venoms,
like, right? Rather than mostly regular Venom,
than like just another Venom. I was like, you have this Venom. You have a lot of these Venoms,
right? Anyway, all right. We'll follow this goes. Star Trek Defiant number 26 from IDW, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by David Tinto. This is continuing the lore war storyline, and here we're getting a bunch of stuff going on as Ben Sisko starts to build up a team to take back the universe from Lore. Meanwhile, Lore is losing a lot of control in various aspects of the universe. Yeah. Particularly, he just can't control the Vulcans, who are also Borgs, among other things. I love this. I know I'm a mark for this, but this is great.
Yeah, I knew
it. For the same reasons that we talked about with the first issue, that it's like it's Age of Apocalypse for the Star Trek universe. I don't know anything that could be more in my wheelhouse.
Well, and plus it goes so hard. Like, this issue is like, Spock is like, hey, you know why we're all Borgs? Well, here's what we did to be Borgs, and now we're fucking badass. I was like, it all happened in a page.
Borgs, look at all
you get the you get the background on how the Vulcans were like, we chose to be Borgs because we figured out Borgs, and now we're Borgs, and now you're dead.
Well, there was that. There was also, like, I don't know if you guys read the text pages. We've talked a lot about whether text pages work or not. They're really working here to the point that, like, the opening is Lore goes back in time to Zefram Cochrane to change history, which I was like, great riff on First Contact. That's awesome. I love this. But then in the text page, it's from hundreds of years later, where they're talking about how Zefram Cochrane became president, and then Lore drowned him
yeah.
to be like, nothing's permanent, guys.
Yeah. That's how humans are. I was like, whoa.
It goes so hard across the board.
How about the Data and Cat panel just looking at each other? That I love that.
That was great, too. They manage, it's all back to Data, and they come up with this recursive loop to get Data out of it for a little bit. And it's just a cat playing, which I thought was really
fun. Well, it's his cat.
It's his cat. Okay.
Yeah, his famous cat.
Nice little moment with the, that was fun.
It's... Like that Spot is a major character in TNG. Like that, it's his. Like that's the smartest way to get to Data.
Yeah. Point being, I like this. I think Lore
War.
Lore War, Pete. I know this is not quite your thing. All right, why don't we move on?
He seems to like it.
Talk about it. Double Christopher Cantwell block Total Accident here, but Challengers of the Unknown number 5 from DC Comics. Written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Sean Isaacs and Alan Kane of Bullpen. Turns out this is the last issue of this book, which I was surprised by. But we are getting the Challengers finding out what exactly has happened to them in terms of being invaded by dark side energy, how that all plays out with the Justice League station. What you guys think about this?
Thought the art had a nice kind of like old school style to it, which I really appreciated. And this was a solid story. Very cool.
I've been loving this comic. I've enjoyed every issue. I like how much it put the Challengers at the center of the all-in universe by them being like this mysterious vessel for the dark side Omega energy. And this is a great mystery. I like we got to focus on each of the characters in turn. I was sad to find that this is the last issue, and I hope we get more. I thought it was also just funny how popular the Absolute line is, where throughout this issue, a lot of the characters are just saying the word Absolute. Like, Absolute.
Yeah.
Buy Absolute comics. Try Absolute if you like comics.
If you think vodka is cool, you should check out Absolute Vodka.
So yeah, good series. Next up, Exceptional X-Men number 8 from Marvel, written by Evel Ewing, art by Carmen Canero. One of our new X-Men was kidnapped by Mr. Sinister last issue, and everybody else is slowly starting to put it together. I know I'm the big fan of this one on the podcast.
Yeah, go off, King.
Yeah. I continue to be a fan. I just think there's really good character dynamics in here. The way our dude's friend figures out that he's wrong and been created like a half-baked Sinister clone, I thought was really fun. The character stuff with Kitty Pryde talking to her new girlfriend was pretty cool as well. And I like the conversation about what?
What? Oh, I'm just surprised that you liked something that had to do with Kitty Pryde. You don't say.
No, I thought it was a well-done conversation in terms of the girlfriend digging into, like, why do you keep calling me normal? I don't know if I love that.
And yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I thought that was, like, an interesting flip on the you're treating me as a weird person X-Men conversation. So, again, I think the character dynamics are really good in this comic, and I am enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I like this, too. It just feels like I don't know what I want. It just needs a little bit of more push or something. Like, it has all the good character and the good drama of an X-Men comic. But it just, it feels like it's such a hangout. Maybe I want them to, like, we know that, like, that they need to track down their kidnapped teammate from an issue and a half ago. Yeah. And they spend so much time being like, this seems like a clone. What do you think we should do?
Yes!
Follow the clone, screw around with the clone a little bit, and then, like, eventually maybe go down. And then, and so, like, maybe that's what is missing for me, but there's just one little seasoning bit that is not quite here for me. But I do enjoy all the character stuff.
I hate to back Justin because it always blows up on me, but I do agree a little bit because there is this thing where, you know, Mr. Sinister is so many moves ahead of our team and they're slowly being like, well, what do you want to do? I don't know. This is clearly not working. And our friend is a pile of goo, but maybe we should look into us. And so there's this little bit where I'm just kind of like yelling at our team being like, catch up. We're getting our asses handed to us out here. There's no way you're going to stop this going at this pace. But that being said, you know, otherwise, you know, like action-wise, you know, art-wise, this is a blast. You know, Mr. Sinister here is a classic great villain for X-Men. You know, he is like oddly almost funny, you know, in this kind of dark way. So it's an interesting character. I just, you know, intense fucking cover, which was cool.
Red Coat, number 11 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. In this issue, our Red Coat is finally meeting the Northerner, who turns out to be a time traveler who is seemingly trying to change or preserve history. Not 100% clear yet, but we'll find out as things go. And he needs Simon Pure, and he's anything but, as you'll soon find out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, Alex. Yeah. I've been a fan of this comic. I think it's really, really good. It feels like it's, of all of the Jeff Johns books that he's been working on lately, this one, it feels like it has the most, like, clear premise to it, like, and the commitment to having our main character, Red Coat, Simon Pure, be an asshole to the point where he takes a job doing a bad thing in this issue. Like, pretty directly, without any sort of, like, hemming and hawing, he's like, oh, the price is right, I'll do it. So I love the commitment to that. I love that Jeff Johns is also like, I just sort of want to tell stories throughout America's history that have a supernatural bend to them. And it's just bouncing around, finding the fun areas he wants to talk about. Very cool. And the last thing I want to say is, feels like Northerner is a Quantum Leap situation. Ooh. Like, traveling back in time to, like you said, Alex, preserve, put right or keep right what's happening. Like, that's a nice idea.
Do you think he has a Swiss cheese memory or
what? I can't wait to meet his Al.
Oh, yeah. Nice reference.
Ziggy's on the fritz.
I hate to sound like a broken record, but every time I go to read this book, I'm like, all right. you know, I don't like this
you
name.
You hate history.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like this name.
Well, you just don't like being reminded that the British lost. And you were on the British side, I believe.
Yeah, nope. He's a classic Tory.
Nope, nope. But yeah. It wins me over.
Why don't we raise the taxes on tea? That was you, Pete.
That's you, Pete.
It wins me over every time. The writing is so good. The character choices, the stuff that's happening. Every time it wins me over, and it's impressive because every time I start with my arms crossed, going, "No, I'm not going to enjoy this." And
you give it a classic nope.
Yeah, and
Pete nope.
It turns that frown upside down. So, impressive artistically.
Do you think
it's
maybe you could
well.
Not cross your arms at the 12th issue, or do you think you will still do that?
We'll find out. I mean, right. I mean, that's the beauty of it. Maybe by this time, lucky number 12, you know what I mean?
Lucky number 12 is bad and you hate it.
That's what he's hoping for.
Yeah.
Proving
that's
those
why,
notes.
That's what I pull it. Yeah, that's what I pull it for.
I think we need to really make nope your catchphrase. Sort of like a Dikembe Mutombo finger wag, except just crossing your arms and saying nope.
Okay.
We'll work on that as we talk about Wonder Woman number 20 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Gillam March. Now that we are kind of past the Sovereign storyline, we can move on to something new, which is a murder on Mount Olympus. So Diana calls in, of course, the greatest detective on any planet, Batman.
Come on.
And immediately runs afoul of the Greek gods. There's a bunch of talk about religion and... You guys seem pretty psyched, so take it away.
Issue of the week.
Yes!
I love this. This is such a good... You know, I've liked a lot of the work that Tom King's been doing in this Wonder Woman title.
Right, right.
But this sort of feels like the premise... This could be its own standalone comic. Like, it's such a good combo here. There's a ton of just great, like... lines in this comic. I think the premise of Wonder Woman calling in Batman to solve this murder mystery is really cool. So many rules established that are great. Batman dealing with a fucked up bureaucracy that can change at any time to his detriment, I think, is really great. Every character is being themselves in such a great way. It's just every scene is interesting and great. This is one of my favorite books for sure in a while.
I hate to agree with Justin again, but yeah, this is just...
Start to love agreeing with me, Pete. Feel better.
Hell yes to this comic. This is such a fun issue. Love me some Batman and Wonder Woman. Maybe romance? Great art. Very enjoyable story. Twists and turns. Loved every panel. Yes, please. More of this. Always. This is glorious.
Ultimate Wolverine, number 4 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. After the events of the last issue where Kitty Pryde, I believe, really messed up Ultimate Wolverine's head, he's starting to remember things. We get a really fascinating structure here where we're getting to see a fight between a wolf, one might say Wolverine, perhaps.
And a bear.
Yeah, and a bear, juxtaposed with what is going on with Wolverine killing a bunch of people back at the Weapon X facility, or what we assume is the Weapon X facility, leading to a very surprising, very upsetting revelation at the end of the issue. I think this was the best issue of this yet. What about you guys?
Oh, interesting. I definitely think a lot of these have been artistically cool. I'm a little resonant to say best issue yet because I feel like there's more great stuff to come. But just to be clear, it wasn't a Wolverine fighting a bear. It's
you're right.
A wolf.
I'll wait until the last issue and then we'll revisit this conversation.
Great. I love that idea. That's a smart way to do it, Cornell.
Sorry, I meant the last issue, meaning the last comic ever.
Yeah, that's exactly
the final
right. We're on the same page. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Right before I die, I'll be like, Ultimate Wolverine 4 was the best.
I like the three of us in a dystopian wasteland putting one last comic to print. Printing one final issue of Wolverine like 800 or whatever. And then Alex, and then really weighing in on our favorite comics, the definitive list.
I don't think we're ever going to find out whether his uncle is back.
Oh, man.
That's the last comic. There's a
Mary
twist.
Jane should be married to Peter.
I Oh, man, if I'm still having that argument by the time I'm dead.
What do you think causes the apocalypse?
Why would you stop now? It's been going for so long. What is going to stop you from being mad about that?
Well, I'm saying if they get together, then I won't have to argue about it anymore.
Are you worried about the John Henry Irons Lana Lang marriage from the Superman comic we talked about earlier?
No, I thought that was a great marriage.
If that gets broken up by a Mephisto-like character?
No, that would suck, man. That would be really dumb. It's a dumb move. Anyways, this comic here, artistically impressive, right? We have this kind of
real quick. If you're selling your marriage to the devil, like, what can you get? Just like raw figures.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There isn't nothing you should be doing for it. The answer is always no. Fuck you, devil. I want this marriage. You fight for the marriage. What the fuck?
I don't know. I'd love to have a producer for this show.
Okay.
Wow.
It would take a lot of stress off.
Maybe your wife could jump in.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'll see what the devil has going on.
Anyways,
that'd be a great monkey's paw situation. Well, Pete, let me ask you this. What if the devil proposed to you not just an undoing of the marriage? What if it was like Peter Parker and Mary Jane could be married, or the Punisher could be married to his picnic wife?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would still go on Peter Parker and MJ.
Really? You want the Punisher's family to die?
No.
That's what you're saying.
No.
You're pulling the trigger, essentially, on the Punisher.
No, but that happened. That was a thing, and it sucked, but that's what happened.
What if the devil said you could have Peter and Mary Jane's marriage back, but you have to marry me? Not me. The devil, I mean.
Yeah. Let me be honest, Alex. I think you are the devil in this situation.
Yeah, exactly.
In this scenario, you're the devil.
I'm already married, at least for now, until we get a producer. Then that's all over.
But I would like to I would like to talk about Ultimate Wolverine number 4 here. Visually interesting idea of we have this kind of like, you know, just nature documentary show happening with a conversation that is about Wolverine kind of breaking out of his restraints. Very cool idea, artistically really well done. I've been super impressed with this, and the fact that he hasn't talked at all is very interesting, and I'm not missing it. So it's impressive what they've been able to pull off.
Yeah, I like the way this was a surprising way to tell the story, and I think it was cool, the nature doc side of it. And then where we end, and we get back to the Wolverine character and what he's dealing with at the end, and I liked the surprise reveal.
A little scary, interesting twist at the end there. Yeah.
And this is another one that I highly recommend reading the text page at the end, because that explains a lot more about what is going on in that last page in a even more upsetting way than you probably thought was going on.
Yay! Be more upset.
Yeah, except Pete, I'm guessing you didn't read the text page because there's one part of it you would really like.
Yeah, I definitely have not. I don't like to read.
Do you want me to tell you what it is?
No, I can go back and read it.
Okay. All right, read it, and you're going to be very excited in a messed up way.
Well, right.
Alex, the devil could tell you.
Yeah,
right,
come
now.
On, tell me what it is. Tell me what it is.
Sure. Okay. So the final page is they've revealed that in order to keep the Winter Soldier program going, they have 3 different checks and balances, if you will. The third one is they have Jean Grey trussed up in a makeshift Cerebro to essentially wipe his mind every time. Did you notice there was a brain over her?
Yes, I did.
That is Professor Xavier's brain.
Oh.
They killed...
Lollipop head.
They killed years earlier. Both Professor X and Magneto took care of them and a bunch of other mutants. But they realized that Professor X's body was preserved enough that they could take his brain out and use the brain to essentially control Jean Grey while she is completely sedated so that they could use the powers to control the Winter Soldier, who is Logan. So,
what the fuck?
Yeah, it's pretty messed up, man.
Wow.
It's cool.
It's crazy.
It is cool.
Some good thinking.
Is it weird that when I saw Jean Grey, I thought, oh, finally, maybe we can get Jean Grey and Wolverine together. You know
what I mean? I mean, it's probably going to happen. We'll see what happens. Mothra, Queen of the Monsters, number 2 from IDW, written by Sophie Campbell, art by Matt Frank and Sophie Campbell. We have 2 ladies who are traveling back in time to get Mothra because Mothra has disappeared from the world. But we get some time travel madness in terms of a time loop going on here. I know you guys were pretty happy with the first issue. How'd you feel about issue number 2?
I love it, man. Mothra Twins, activate. This is fun stuff. I love the art, specifically action. I'm a sucker for giant monsters. This was very enjoyable. I also like that, the way they talked to Mothra, you know, and he was like fighting, and then they were like, come on, Mothra, let's go. And Mothra was like, all right, I'll drop this fight right now and roll with you guys. So pretty cool.
My mom's name is Mothra.
Save Mothra.
Yes, we ever all know what we're talking about. The, like the art in this, you know, the Mothra. How do we feel about Mothra?
Great. Is Mothra Mothra's a main character? Awesome. How dare you? What are you about to do right now, dude?
I'm just curious. What is so good about Mothra? Is it the moth part?
Yeah. Haven't you? Did you see the fucking art for the next issue?
That, no, that's what I said.
Sorry, continue that thought. What other part would it be?
That's my question. That's sort of what my question is. Because we see Mothra appears a lot, usually as a Godzilla buddy.
Right.
And Mothra mostly just flies around and then gets like totally crashed by some other kaiju.
Sure.
Well,
but Mothra lives to fight another day.
I'm with you there. It is interesting to have a Mothra solo title because that thought struck me while reading this. But I think that's why you hook it on two people who are friends who are dealing with some secrets of their past and time travel ridiculousness. I think there's a light arch tone here, particularly given the monster attacks and the danger that they're in, that is very fun. I'm having a good time with this so far. Even if I agree with you, I'm like, Mothra? All right.
Well, and the idea that they're raising a new Mothra to be cool, maybe that's the secret, is a cool Mothra.
Not the Mothra.
Because just moths in general, like, I don't go crazy for. From an
we
animal
have a lot
fan.
Of moths down here in the basement where I'm taping, and they keep eating everything. There are holes in all of our clothes. So,
wow.
Oh, terrifying.
You guys hate moths.
Looking forward to crashing on that couch.
Don't bring your famous wool sweater collection.
Oh, man, I'm going to be naked by the time I wake up.
Yeah, it won't be the moths,
that's,
though.
That's just what the devil wants.
The new
devil
gods,
wants.
Number five.
Pete's sex summer. Pete's sexual journey summer. Softcore Pete.
The new gods, number five from DC Comics, written by Reb V, art by Evan Cagle and Andrew McLean. As usual, a lot of stuff going down in this issue as we are finding out about Light Ray and the Black Racer. Did I get the names right?
Yes.
Their relationship, as well as the potential destiny of this new god on Earth and a new enemy who is taking down New Genesis. So everything keeps ramping up in a big way every issue of this book, and it's pretty impressive.
Also, artistically, it's impressive. We kind of change. We get kind of two artists in here. It starts off with the Headlopper art, which I was losing my mind over. It was so cool to kind of see that in this world, and then change over to a really detailed kind of different style, but I thought worked really well for the story, which I was surprised about. A lot of times when you change art in the middle of a story, it can pull you out of it, but I thought it was used really well here and was really impressive. Both art styles, so well done. I thought this was a blast of a story. I was just really impressed and thought this was badass, man.
Yeah, this comic's excellent. There is a lot going on.
Sure.
In the main story. But I like, we got some moments here. I like pinning this on the Light Ray story and the Light Ray versus the Black Ray story. I thought was really smart. And, you know, it is like the new gods losing their spot, basically, from these even newer, more darker tinged gods. And that's fun. I feel like we've seen so much of Miracle Man just be having the fabled child that needs to be the future of whatever situation he's in. So I want them, it feels like they're moving to Earth to start a new thing. And I want to get there because that's when I feel like things can really grow out of this. But there's so many interesting things. The art is fantastic. There's a panel Where one of this new threat just gets wrecked, just gets blasted with a light, and it's this incredibly detailed, like Grateful Dead skeleton color palette it's getting shot off. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So this is like one of those books that it has just so much juice going for it, and I was also happy that I had forgotten the cover by the time I got to the last page, which is important for the surprise of the issue.
Yeah, I get that. Sucks when that happens, you know what I mean?
Daredevil, Unleash Hell, Red Band number 4 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Valentina Pinti and Jose Luis Soares. In this issue, Elektra is in hell, dealing with a demonic version of herself. Meanwhile, Ghost Rider is trying to save her from the two muses, and there's more twists and turns from there. Fist Pump and Pete, talk about this book.
This is a really cool issue here. I love the art, love the action, you know. Also, it's, you know, a little late for Muse 2 to be questioning her life choices. You know, it's classic scenario. You get to hell and now you're questioning things. You know what I mean? Like, come on. But great use of Ghost Rider in this. Absolutely just really some badass stuff. I am having such a blast with this. Erica Schultz is killing it on this book. So cool to see Elektra Daredevil going through all of this stuff. And her kind of like inner monologue as she's fighting her evil self is so great. JT Sizzle loves when you get inside their heads and get to kind of hear what's going on. So, yeah, I just, I'm having such a blast with this, and it's so cool. Yeah, and also very timely with the TV show going on right now and having Muse in there. So, cool.
I can't believe the timing worked out. What are the odds of that?
What are the odds?
This, Erica Schultz just comes at her narrative structure for her comics in just a different way. And it feels like much more intuitive. It feels like it comes out of the character a lot more rather than just a superstructure that is laid on. And so, like, each issue feels a little bit fresher and a little bit more surprising than some other comics. The way that Elektra is fighting evil hell versions of all these characters reminded me a lot of, was it Infinity War? Where all of the Marvel Universe characters had to fight like an evil version of themselves.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Back in the day. Anybody?
Maybe.
Anybody here? Do you guys read comics?
I do, but it's like, let me dust off the
Follow up, because there was Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, and Infinity Crusade.
Right. Can we revisit this when the last comic comes out? Because I'll really be able to like read all of them by then.
Wow. What if this stack is the last? What if that's it?
What if
you thought about that?
Yeah. What if the Watcher? You ever thought about what if?
You ever thought about the idea of what if?
No.
Would
Marvel released a comic book called "What If This Was the Last Comic Book You Ever Read"?
Wow.
Would you pick it up?
What if you're going to die reading comics, just like you always wanted? Ooh. You know what I mean?
It's probably full of razor blades or something.
What if we could get? You think
you're
going to
die from reading comics?
Probably.
Are you going to die reading a comic or die from reading a comic?
Probably both, right?
Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like it poisoned, like a poison. It's true. Comics poison your brain.
Yeah. No, from all like the ink on my fingers.
No, I think it was so good. You kind of have a heart attack or something. You know what I mean? Like
because it was so good.
Yeah.
Like you're so happy.
Yeah. Like, classic finally, good heart
Peter
attack.
Peter Parker and Mary Jane are finally.
If I paid like an excellent comic book writing an art team mm-hmm. to create a comic on my own dime of Peter and Mary Jane getting back together, and you read it and died, could I be convicted of murder? This is a hypothetical question. Because that's like, I'm just creating.
What do you
art.
Think the jury would say to you? You know what I mean? Because if they played this tape, you would be fucked, bro.
Oh, this tape will be deleted. Fairies. I'm cutting this. This is getting cut. I'm going to talk to the editor.
Good luck.
I think that's an open and shut case. I'm off. People will be like, I'll be celebrated. The 12 jurors will pick me up as the potential good convicted man and walk me out of the courtroom. Like,
speaking of which, if the devil is listening to this, I know I already said the thing about the producer, but I'd also be cool with just like an editor. Like, not, it could be an editor, producer, you know, a combo type thing, but
a predator.
A predator.
Ooh, predator. Yeah.
A producer editor.
Yeah,
a producer
editor. Yeah, there you go.
That's a predator. Yeah.
Like a sexual predator. Is that what you mean?
No, dude, come on.
Like,
man.
Wait, do you mean a sexual producer and sexual editor? Because that's what I'm hiring that for Pete this summer. Pete's gonna, I'm gonna produce and edit Pete's sexual summer. And I'll tell you what, it's gonna need a lot of editing. It's gonna need a lot of editing. Because it goes on too long at different points.
It
goes
on too long at different points. Depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
Mine is
and
a
some
lo-
of it, I mean, honestly, some of it's a little short. Some of it's a little short. Needs a little, like, nope. Let's build out the story here.
Yeah,
let's
can cut we get reshoots? Can we do reshoots?
Yeah, we need some B-roll here. B-roll
nothing
of
short
Pete having
it.
Sex?
Nothing short about it. Wow.
By the way, for anybody who doesn't know any of these industry terms, when we're talking about B-roll of Pete having sex, that's he's covered in bees. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
He likes the moths when he's in my basement. He likes bees anywhere else.
That's nice, but the B and B roll stands for butthole. But anyway, let's move on to this comic.
Mine is a long and gruesome grave.
Nope. Mine is a long, loathsome grave.
Pete, trying to move on, can't read. Trying to move on to this story, but can't read words. He can't read. No wonder he doesn't read text pages.
That's right.
Mine is a long, loathsome grave, there. Number 3 from Odie Press, written by Justin Jordan, art by Man House. We are following a dude who's been cursed by, he thinks, a gang leader who is a grandma and is killing his way up the chain to find her. But there's a big twist that happens to the end here that I thought was very well done. I'm digging this revenge series, and I thought the art was really interesting here. I think this is a different artist than the first two issues, right? Or am I 100% wrong about that?
Tell you what, you guys talk,
I'll check.
All right, great. That works out well. This was a crazy cover. This had a lot of nopes for me. This is gross as hell.
Six nopes.
Yeah, this was at least six. And the last page reveal had 7 on itself because the grandma was scary as fuck, and that's a lot of nopes.
You like your grandmas to be alive and kicking.
And badass, yeah, not dead and creepy. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, from an attractiveness point of view.
Well, no,
I hear you, Pete.
I don't know why you're making it weird.
I'm not making it weird. I'm following up on a longstanding thing that we've discussed multiple times on and off mic. But I enjoy this comic as well. Very moody, dark art by the same artist.
Different artist. It was Chris Sheehan on the first two issues.
Oh,
and now it's
Mon House.
Mon House.
Yeah.
On the art.
Whose house is it?
Yeah. Mon House. This twist at the end, curious how much, because I don't know, the twist at the end, I was like, I don't know what this means for our character. Mm-hmm. It was sort of an, what would you call that, like an open-ended
twist? Yeah.
An open twist.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Zatanna, number 3 from DC Comics by Jamal Campbell. Zatanna is trapped in a noir 1920s, 1930s style film land filled with characters we know, like Bruce Wayne and Clayface, among others, while she has a mystical sword stuck through her middle. I'm really liking this series. And I also really liked how much this reminded me of the Clayface One Bad Day one-shot. I think there were
one of my favorite one-shots ever, maybe.
Yeah. Definitely shades of that, but I really like how this is spinning out. It's very fun.
Yeah, I agree. The art's really impressive. Great to see Blue Devil. Like the twists and turns. But yeah, artistically, there's some really impressive panels in here. And it's just kind of a joy to read and look at.
Yeah, I like this as well. I feel like a lot of Zatanna's stories follow a similar track, and this one is pushing her into some different directions. She's losing very hard throughout.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I don't know if you guys are watching the season of Black Mirror yet.
Mm-hmm. No.
But there's an episode that is a little bit similar to some of the stuff that's happening here that I thought was just a funny confluence of events. But
what are you saying? You're saying that
no one's ripping anybody off.
Are you sure?
It just was a funny.
Seems like maybe
definitely. The possibilities of that are so low.
Yeah, slim to zero. You're thinking of Hotel Reverie, right?
Hotel Reverie, yes, yeah. Where a character in that is stuck in a film noir, essentially, as well. So that is just a funny coincidence.
What the fuck happened here? He asked if anybody was watching, and we were both like, no. And then you're like, oh, I know exactly what episode you're talking about, though.
No, I didn't say I didn't watch it. I nodded yes.
No.
He nodded yes.
I thought your quiet was the agreement of no.
You got to look. No, you have to look and listen, Pete, because your eyes are open right now.
And I was listening to him as he continued to talk and not talking over him.
Well, then how's that a podcast?
Well played.
Wow, got us there. Well played,
why don't
Pete.
We wrap up here and talk about Cable, Love and Chrome, number 4 from Marvel, written by David Popoz, art by Mike Henderson. We had David on the show this week. And we talked to him about this.
Yeah!
Yes.
I'm not sure what game you're playing here. Yeah. Anyway, in this issue, Cable is dealing with the fact that Avery, the woman he loves, is dying. And so he tries to change time to save her. But by the end, maybe causes exactly the thing that he was trying to stop in the first place. I thought this issue was great, the best one so far. I love the twists and turns, the time travel. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, I feel like Peepos was a little cagey with the details on this. We were really putting the screws to him in the interview about giving us more information about this.
That's
and he was dodging us. He was giving us the old kind of like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I've been working really hard on it and, you know, really love Cable and... I was like, all right, but I guess we'll keep reading to find out what happens.
Well, but I think the reason he was not telling is because the issue hadn't come out when we were talking about that. And this is a great issue that is like the crux of the whole story. Like,
yeah, he said he was like building towards this issue or something. That doesn't sound like something writers do.
You know, what are you, a jock? Are you bullying him? Like, oh, you good at math, Jock? Well, then do my homework. No, he's telling a great story here. And the way this issue was like, not to keep talking about Black Mirror, but if this issue felt like a Black Mirror episode where it's a character who is trying to do the right thing and it keeps getting worse because of the use of a technology that he knows he shouldn't be using in the way that he's using it. And that's great. Like, you can tell we're right there with Cable. We know why he's doing what he's doing, and we want him to be happy. But each time he does the time slides, we know that it is
and
eventually
also,
the wrong
without
choice.
Saying what the reveal is, I distinctly remember, I think it was the first issue, maybe it was the second, where we had a conversation with the podcast, like, who is this Cicada character? What does he want? Yeah, why is he after him? And we're like, I don't know. I think it's just a generic time traveler thing. Nope. You find out exactly who Cicada is, why Cicada wants to kill him. And I thought that reveal was great.
Very well done. Agree.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's great action, great art. You know, it's hard because Cable is one of these characters that you root for and you root for, but things always work against him. So hopefully, you know, he gets a little bit of sunshine in his day, but I don't know when it's going to come.
Oh,
you know what
that's
I mean?
Nice.
Oh, Cable, I hope you get a little sunshine in your day.
If you steal his sunshine.
Anyway, that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah, I just wanted to apologize real quick for Justin. Black Mirror is so hot right now. He just doesn't have a lot of cool, creative things, you know, to compare
you
stuff
to. You want to know what's hot right now? It's Pete LePage's OnlyFans. It goes live on June 21st as we kick off the Pete's Sexual Summer. Oh, we will be covering every in and every out, and I mean that how you think I mean that. Jazz, let's go.
And a fun little Easter egg, if you search OnlyFans, you will, in fact, find a OnlyFans for Pete LePage. That's not a joke.
That's not me, though.
It is you. It's technically
I've done
us.
I've done nothing on OnlyFans, and I will do nothing.
There's at least
on
one
so
post.
Far. Click and subscribe. Occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grip.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.